We're on Mitzvah Lamed Beis.
Exactly, you got to read all the commentary.
I know.
And the mitzvah is Shelo Lasos Melacha B'Shabbos. It's a very yisoidiyistik mitzvah. As the Sefer Chinuch is going to explain later, this is one of the most important mitzvahs in the Torah. He devotes much less space to it than, for example, Shavua Shav, where he devoted lots of pages to explaining exactly what a Shavua was and what a Nether was and all these things. So, but because there's so many halachos, I mean, in the Dharma also, but the Minchas Chinuch has pages and pages where he discusses all his chidushim on the different halachos, the different labors that are prohibited on Shabbos. The Sefer Chinuch is very relatively short regarding Shabbos, so it doesn't discuss all the halachos, but he alludes to some important notes. So that's what we're going to discuss now. Shelo lasos melacha biyom haShabbos, not to perform labor on the day of the Sabbath. Anachnu, first of all, we ourselves are not allowed to perform labor on the Sabbath. Velo naniach lasos, not only are we commanded not to perform labor on the Sabbath, but levanenu ve'avdenu uvehemtenu. So we are responsible for the Sabbath observance of our minor children, obviously, because adult children are people in their own right, commanded in the Torah just like anyone else. The avdenu are non-Jewish slaves who have certain Jewish obligations. Uvehemosenu, and not only people who are under our watch, but even our animals are not allowed to perform labor on Shabbos. Shenemar, as it says, Lo saseh kol melacha ata uvincha ve'avdecha ve'amasecha, Uvemtecha, etc. It's all in the Ten Commandments. It talks about us and our children, and our slaves and our animals. Ve'ein safek. There's no doubt. Ki afal pishek hakosuv hotzi iser hamalacha banu uvevanim uvavodim uvehemos belavecha. Even though the Torah says all these things in one breath, the prohibition of us doing malacha as well as our children and slaves and animals, she'ein ha'inyan shave. It's not the same level of prohibition. Ki ha'oseh melacha begufo, if you yourself perform labor on the Sabbath, yischayev misas bezdenim humezid. If you do it on purpose, you are liable for death at the hands of the bezden, if you perform a biblically prohibited labor on Shabbos. Unleches acherim, but if somebody else does the melacha, not you, even somebody you're responsible for, afal pishe muzhar alehem belav, lo yischayev alehen afilu malkus. Even though you have a negative commandment to prevent them from doing malacha, you don't even receive lashes, like the normal penalty for a negative commandment. Why? She'ein malchus le'olam b'maaseh achirim. You never, ever, just like you don't receive lashes for what we call lav she'ein bo maaseh, it's something that you yourself are prohibited to do but doesn't have an action involved, like keeping chametz in your house over Pesach, just not bothering to remove it rather than going out and buy it, which would be yesh bo maaseh. But since somebody else is doing the malacha, you're not doing it, so you don't even receive lashes, which is a much more minor penalty, obviously, than death, if somebody else does this for you on Shabbos. It should be noted, by the way, that not all authorities note it explicitly that you're not allowed to allow your minor children to do malacha for you on Shabbos. It's sort of inferred. There's an inference in the Mishnah. There is Mechilta that discusses it. But not all authorities spell out as explicitly as a Sefer HaChinuch that you're not allowed to let your minor children do malacha for you on Shabbos. So apparently it was a very common thing in Europe that people actually used to have their children perform malacha. Some people do it, I think, nowadays also, that they're quicker to go to have their minor child do malacha for them than to a Shabbos goy, which is really not correct. Really, you are supposed to prevent even your minor children from doing malacha on Shabbos. There was a story actually in Warsaw where one time there's a very punctilious Jew who certainly, well, he relied on the Erev in Warsaw, but he was very stringent about carrying when there was no Erev. So one time he was walking in the street on Shabbos and he got word, somebody passing by told him that the Erev was down. So he quickly took off his glasses and handed them to his little son who was walking next to him. So Reb Chaim Brisker apparently either witnessed or was told about this episode. So he said, this fellow's crazy. He's for a chumrah, of not wearing glasses outside on Shabbos without an Eruv. He's Mikil on Nisr D'Araisa that you're not allowed to have your children do Malacha for you on Shabbos. Of course, if we're really in Nisr D'Araisa, there couldn't have been an Eruv in the first place. Obviously, held it wasn't an Nisr D'Araisa to carry in Warsaw, which is an issue unto itself that we'll maybe get back to a little bit later. But you'll see that Reb Chaim Brisker was very into this Isser of not allowing your children to do Malacha for you on Shabbos. But it was very, very widespread, even not commanding them directly, but doing that they can't do something that you derive benefit from. Oh, glasses. So we'll go more into the issue of glasses. So presumably, this is very important, presumably the glasses that are referred to in those story are the glasses referred to in the Chai Adam. The Chai Adam, quoted in the Mishnah Berurah Kotzim, says that one should be stringent not to wear glasses on Shabbos in a place where one cannot carry. So the later post can point out that what the Chai Adam is talking about is glasses in the old, very old style, where they just perched on your nose and they didn't have ear pieces. So obviously the Chai Adam said it's a stringency, it's not absolutely maker it in. So even without ear pieces, it's not actually carrying to wear those types of glasses on Shabbos, because they fit on your nose and you need them to see. So it's not considered carrying, it's just that they might fall off because they're not securely attached to your face, and you might carry them after they fall off. So for that reason, the poskim used to recommend that one should be stringent not to wear glasses on Shabbos. Nowadays, we assume that there's no inyan whatsoever, there's no reason whatsoever to refrain from wearing glasses outside on Shabbos.
If they're there for distance reading.
They're for distance vision. The heter for wearing glasses is based on two things. One, that you need them in order to see properly, so there's an accessory to your body, which is sort of like a tachshit. And another part of the reason you're allowed to wear them is because they fit securely on your face, so it's sort of the surah, the form of them is a sort of like a malbush, sort of like a garment that one wears because they fit snugly on your face. So which one of these reasons is the more important one? So depending on that, we could decide what the problem is with wearing, say, reading glasses outside on Shabbos. So reading glasses, the poskim say one should not wear on Shabbos outside, because since you don't need them to see at all times, they're not something you wear at all times because you can't see without them, it's just for a very specific purpose, like a magnifying glass that you wear reading glasses. So easily, if you walk outside, you decide you don't need them. What am I wearing these reading glasses for? I'm not reading anything. You might easily decide to take them off and put it in, not thinking about it, and put them in your pocket. Therefore, you shouldn't wear reading glasses outside on Shabbos. But what if you do? Is it only an Isser Derabbanan? Is it only a good idea not to wear them because you might take them off and carry them? Or is it really a Chiyuv Chatos? Is it an Isser Deraisa to wear reading glasses outside on Shabbos? So the answer to that would depend on whether the Ikar reason is because they're an accessory to your body because you need them to see, or whether they're a malbush because they fit snugly on your face. With regular glasses, you, of course, have both reasons. There's no problem whatsoever. But reading glasses are an issue. But it's a question, it's a difference of opinion between contemporary poskim, whether there will be usur midaraisa, biblically prohibited, or usur midarabanan, rabbinically prohibited, to wear reading glasses outside on Shabbos.
I learned that bifocals are allowed on Shabbos. But if they're just for reading, I should not wear them.
Of course, bifocals are certainly allowed because they're just regular glasses with a little piece inside that allows you to read also. So for sure, even more so, would you never take them off and you wear them all the time. So it's no problem. Some briskers are even makbid on not wearing regular glasses outside on Shabbos because they have a strict, super literal reading of this Chai Adam that maybe they're not, who knows. But as far as I'm aware, no normative posik in the world says that it's any problem whatsoever to wear normal glasses outside on Shabbos. But if you don't wear your glasses all the time, if you just, like you say, your vision is basically fine, but you occasionally, just to see the board in the classroom, you wear glasses, or just that it helps you see better, so then there is certainly room to be stringent not to wear those glasses outside on Shabbos in a place where you would not be allowed to carry. Again, it's probably not Asur D'Oraisa, but it's definitely highly recommended not to do that. So one further comment that the person who, it was funny though, that usually people, the briskers who don't wear glasses on Shabbos at all, normally would be associated with the not using the Eruv crowd. So you see this fellow in Warsaw, it was very interesting. that he was medakdek not to wear glasses on Shabbos in a place he couldn't carry, but he relied on the Erev in Warsaw. And the Erev in Warsaw is one of the major case studies in terms of Erevin in large cities, which one of the prototypes of the fact that there were communities that had a very large population, very large city, and they constructed Erevin anyway. So the early Rishonim and Ashkenaz point out that we rely on the opinion that it's not a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa, it's not an area, a public domain from the Torah, if there are fewer than 600,000 people that traverse the streets in the area. The simple understanding of these Rishonim is that it just has to be an area where the streets serve 600,000 people. Seems to be a reading in the Shulchan Aruch. It seems to be the way he phrases it. A lot of people assume that he means that it has to be 600,000 people traversing the one street on a daily basis. I don't think there have ever been streets like that. I mean, maybe recently some highways, but that's a very difficult reading. The Mishnah Berurah already points that out, that it's a camp. Then there are all the Rishonim that discuss the requirement for Shishim Ribo, what we call that 600,000 people need to be use the street. It doesn't mean one street on a daily basis. It means that it's only a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. You're only biblically prohibited to carry in a place if the street serves a population of 600,000. So that's the simple reading of that. So there is a Shita. The most Sephardi Rishonim, for example, don't hold that there's a requirement at all. They hold that any street that's basically any major street that's 16 amos wide, less than 32 feet, considerably less, is could be a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa, that's prohibited to carry there on a biblical level. So the heter for making an Eruv, that we know, that's a Tzuras HaPesach, that just is the two, meaning it has two poles that act as doorposts, and then the string running across on top. It doesn't have to be a string, it could be anything. But it has to be a form. Basically, the heter is based on the fact that looks like a door frame. So just like in a house or in a yard, the doors don't always have to be shut for the enclosed area to be allowed to carry there on Shabbos. But it could even look like a door. It could even be a door frame. So that only works if the area is only usher to carry there midrabanan. If it's only rabbinically prohibited to carry there, you could erect what we call a Tzuras HaPesach, a rudimentary door frame with the two poles and the string on top, then you could carry there. So the reason that they, in most places, they constructed Erevin, the Rishonim point out, they have a lashon. A lot of the early Rishonim, they have a language saying, Ein lanu Rishus HaRabim bizman hazeh. Nowadays, we don't have any more Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. That was basically predicated on the assumption that you need 600,000 people to be considered a Rishus HaRabim. And we don't have such huge cities. We live in little towns, and the population is nowhere near 600,000. So none of the streets serve a population of 600,000 people. So for sure, since we hold that that's the main opinion that you do need 600,000 people. Not any street that's wide enough is considered a Rishus HaRabim. So we have no problem constructing an Eruv based on Tzuras HaPesach. So then we arrive in places such as Warsaw. For hundreds of years, this wasn't a problem. So we have a little bit of an issue with the place of Warsaw. When the Erev was originally built in Warsaw, in the 19th century, the population of Warsaw was not even 600,000. But then at a certain point, their population went over 600,000, and the Jews, many Jews, I mean, people always fight over Erevin, so there are certainly people in Warsaw who did not use the Erev, but many people in Warsaw did continue to use the Erev even after there was 600,000 people living in Warsaw. So that's a little bit of a problem. The poskim talk about maybe that the heter was based on the fact that you need the streets to run directly from one end of the city to the other without curving, without any... But that's not everybody accepts that problem, so... That's basically the issue. That's Warsaw is pretty much the prototype of the Jewish city, the huge Jewish city that anyway had an Erev in it, even though seemingly at first glance one should consider that a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa because the streets served a population of way over 600,000 people. But as one of my Rebbeim likes to point out, in large segments of the Jewish people, the approach to Erevin is basically, first we build the Erev, then we decide why it's mutar. We don't, it doesn't work the other way around. Anyway, it's all technicalities. Okay, so Milashon HaRambam, continuing in the Sefer Chinuch, Milashon HaRambam Zichrona Levracha, Mashma Shehu Sover, he seems to hold, Ki Alav Hazeh Delo Tase Kol Malacha Ata Uvincha, etc. That refers to your slaves and your children. Uvehemtecha Yovo Limechamer Achar Behemto. That means you're leading the animal while it's performing a prohibited labor. So what does that mean? What does he think that means? Uchgon shechoresh ba uchliha macharesha biyado, meaning you're plowing with the animal and you're holding the plow. It's not just that the animal is doing work and you're not involved at all. You're actually holding the plow. Deilu b'machamer levad lefidato ein bo elo isar aseh. But if you just lead the animal while it's performing a prohibited melacha, and you're not actively doing anything, you're just, let's say it's has a plow attached to it, and you're saying, come here, and it's plowing the field. Or let's say you have your load on top of the animal, and you're leading it through Rishus HaRabim, and you're saying, come animal, come here, then you are, according to the Rambam, that's only an Isser Aseh, meaning that it tells you there's no lav. In other words, negative prohibitions are much more stringent usually than positive commandments. So when it has a negative, so this is not even a real negative prohibition, just since it says in a different pasuk, "Uvayom Ashvi Tishbos Leman Yanuach Shorcha V'Chamorecha," that you, in order that it telling you that your animals should rest. So you see from the fact that it tells you that your animals should rest, that you're not allowed to cause your animals to do work. But it's not a negative prohibition per se, it's only you learn out something you're not supposed to do because the Torah tells you a positive phrasing. That it tells you, you should let them rest, so you learn out from that that you should not allow them to do malacha. But since it doesn't say it explicitly in a negative formulation, then it doesn't have the stringency of a full negative commandment. V'alkein amru ba'gemara lefi daito shezeh alav demachamer. It says in the Gemara that according to the Rambam, that this of lav of mechamer who lav shenitan lazharas misas bezdin. So the Gemara has a lashon that the lav of mechamer, we don't receive the full punishment because it's possible to be put to death for it. Kilomar shadam nera galzev ein lokin al. The reason you don't receive lashes is because since it has the possibility of putting, we have a general principle that when something's a negative commandment is subject to the potential of one being put to death for it, so one doesn't receive the lesser penalty of lashes. Ever. So that's the reason, according to the Rambam, that Mechamer is called Nitan Lazharas Misas Bezdin, because Rambam holds that the real Mechamer, the real leading of an animal on Shabbos, involves you doing an actual prohibition, you holding the plow while the animal is going and plowing, as opposed to just egging the animal on or sending the animal out with a plow without you actually doing anything, which is the lesser, one would say, form of Mechamer. Just to point out before we go on that there is actually a whole set of Mishnayos, this whole perek in Masechah Shabbos. There's one perek called Bame Isha, what is a woman allowed to wear on Shabbos, what's she not allowed to wear on Shabbos. And there's another perek called Bame Behema, what's a animal allowed to, quote unquote, wear on Shabbos, and what's it not allowed to wear. So with the general principle is that if something's a normal, I mean, there are a lot of details about this, but if something's a normal thing that you use to protect the animal or keep it from running away, or certain things that you tie onto them, or certain garment-like things, so they're allowed to go out in Rishus HaRabim wearing that on Shabbos. So there's a whole set of things of what animals are allowed to wear on Shabbos in Rishus HaRabim, just like there's a whole set of rules about what people are allowed to wear on Shabbos in Rishus HaRabim. That's basically also why you're allowed to walk your dog on Shabbos, because the leash is required to save the animal from running away and again, whatever. So you are allowed to take the dog out wearing the leash on Shabbos because the dog is wearing the leash. And as long as you don't like wrap the leash around your hand in a manner that now that you're carrying the leash on your hand, you're just holding on to it passively, then the dog is considered to be wearing its leash. There's a whole set of halachas about that as well. The Haramban, Zichrono Livracha, continuing in Sefer HaChinuch, Yispos Olav Harbei Beferush Hazeh. The Ramban does not at all like the Shita of the Rambam about Mechamer, that the real Mechamer is that you are actively assisting it in doing the melacha, and the lesser level of mechamer is just egging it on. The amar ki lav zeh shel mechamer eino ela beholech achar behemto atuna masoi. That the whole, there's no two levels of mechamer. There's only one type of mechamer. And what does that mean? It means that the animal has a burden, you're just egging it on, and you're just walking behind it, helping it get through Rishus Arabim. Aval ha'adam lo yasa shum ma'aseh b'yadav. The person who's dealing with the animal is not doing any actual action with his hands. V'lachein lo yavo alav la'olam lo malkus v'lo misa. That's more simply is the reason that you never receive lashes, or certainly not death penalty for doing mechamer. Kedikai malan, kol lav shein b'maisa, ein lokin lav, it's just a regular lav shein b'maisa, it's a negative prohibition that does not involve an action. Uchmo shedarshu zichronim livracha, we have a drasha in Masecha Shabbos, ata uvehemtecha, you and your animal as well, lichtuv kra lo sase ko malacha uvehemtecha, so why does the pasuk say, don't do any malacha, you... you, it adds the word you, not just, it just don't do any malacha and your animal. Atal amali, why does it add the word explicitly, atam, you, in addition to the animal? It's the pronoun is included in lo sasa also. Lo sasa means you. So it adds an extra separate pronoun. Hu nihu dechi avid malacha mechayev. So you, it means when you do the malacha, you are receive the prohibition. But when just the animal is doing the malacha, the person who's egging it on does not receive any prohibition. Aval malachas behemto lo mechayiv ela shemuzar alea belav. For your animal, you don't receive any penalty. Rather, it's only a regular negative commandment. Kimo b'malachas b'no akatan v'avdo aknani. Just like for your young child and your non-Jewish slave. You also, same thing with it with your animals. You're not allowed to have it do any malacha on your watch. But of course, if you're doing the animal, if you're holding the plow and the animal's going and you're assisting it to plow, so of course you're chayav. Of course you're liable for the full penalty of violating Shabbos. Sharei onsho miforash. So we don't need an extra pasuk to tell us that. There's no institution of mechamer on that thing. Sharei onsho meforish kol oseh bo malacha yumas. That's explicit. If you do any malacha on the Shabbos, you're supposed to be put to death. Umash amru ba gemara belav de mechamer shu lav the shenitan lazharis misas bezdin. So the Rambam has a problem that he has to answer by the fact that mechamer is called in the Gemara a lav that's attached to the death penalty. So how can mechamer be a lav that's attached to the death penalty if you're not doing any action? That's why the Rambam creates his new category of super mechamer. He calls that mechamer when you're leading it on and it's plowing. So perusha lefidas haRamban, the Ramban doesn't interpret it as literally. Zichron levracha, ki mibneishu kol el shar melachos. It's just part of the general prohibition of Shabbos. Gam kein shem bazharas misas bezdin. So just as mechamer is part of the general prohibition of Shabbos, which is subject to the death penalty, but doesn't mean the mechamer specifically is part of this system. Afagav de mechamer vaday ein bo el alav greda. Mechamer itself certainly is only a lav. Da filu malchus nami ein bo. One does not receive lashes even for performing mechamer. Afal pichem nikra alav azeh lav shenitan lazaris misas bezdin. So the whole system of Shabbos is called Lav Shenitan Lazaris Misas Bezdin, not specifically the Lav of Mechamer, because Mechamer per se does not receive any penalty because you're not doing anything. The first parak of Erevin. Like we saw... before when we were talking about Tchum Shabbos, the boundary of how far you're allowed to walk on Shabbos, that there's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban about that as well. The Rambam holds that there is such an institution of Tchum Shabbos even on a biblical level. And it's true that it's longer, it's a bigger area you have to walk on a biblical level and then on a rabbinic level. The rabbis added on a much shorter Tchum. The rabbinic Tchum is like half a mile or something like that. It's very, very short. But the biblical Tchum is Yud Beis Mil, 12 mil. So the Ramban argues with the Rambam over there. He says that the pasuk of al yetze ish mimekomo b'yom hashvi, a person should not leave his place on Shabbos, does not refer to tchum per se, like the Rambam says it does. The meaning that there is a tchum on a biblical level. Dechevan he shukolel af motzi mirishus lirishus. He says al yetze. There's a drush in the Gemara that doesn't mean literally the person should not leave his place on a biblical level. It's a reference to the malacha of hotzah, of carrying, of transferring objects from one domain to another on Shabbos. Uchedrasha shedarshu bo al yotzi. Dehave le me'at alav shenitan lazharis misas bezdin b'miktsas inyanov. So it's just, it's included, the provision of mechamer is included in the general system of Shabbos. That's nosun lazharis misas bezdin, that has the subject of death penalty, but it per se is not. V'chevan shekein, islan lemeimar bezeh b'chol inyanov she'ein lokin alav. So for that reason, we have to single it out specifically to say that you're not, don't even receive lashes for the penalty of mechamer. That's exactly how he's going to explain this, the prohibition of mechamer over here, that is not subject at all to any physical penalties, the death, certainly not the death penalty, but not even lashes. It's simply a lav, and since it's a negative prohibition without an action, one does not receive any penalty for it per se, but obviously should still not do it. Mishorshe mitzvazo, from the reasoning for this mitzvah, sheniye pnuyi me'asakeinu lichvod hayom. What's the reason we can't do prohibited labor on Shabbos? Meaning we have to have a day where we are not involved in our worldly matters. We're totally outside the realm of our general activities. Why? Likboa benafshoseinu emunas chidush ha'olam. That with the reason that we have to rest on Shabbos is because we have to. Again, the Sefer Chinuch is into that the mitzvos are trying to teach us lessons, and repeating them over and over just drills the lesson into us more. So every time we observe Shabbos, we're supposed to ponder the fact that the world is created by God, and it didn't always exist. There was a point in time where the universe did not exist at all. Shechevel ha-mosheches kol yisodei hadas. That this principle of the fact that the world is created by God is the Sefer Chinuch has a poetic language over here where he says that it's a rope that pulls all the other fundamentals of religion. V'nizgor b'yom echad b'chol shavua v'shavua, and we should remember on one day each week, she'olam nivra b'shisha yamim chalukim, that the world was created in six separate days, u'v'shvi lo nivra davar, God, on the seventh day God created nothing. That on each day of the 6 days there were different specific things that were created. That shows that the whole reason of creation is that God wanted it. That the God at a certain point wanted the world to exist. And it's not that it's going to say shalokadaz. It's not according to the opinion of hamispalsifim, the philosophers. Hanimasim lanu bedatam, the repulsive to us. Ze shechoshvin lomar sheim hayoso baruchu hayahakol. That God and God's existence and the world's existence are coterminal. That they have the same, that the existence of the world and God are basically synonymous, and the world always existed just the same as God always existed. Uvimnuchasenu bashvi. And since we rest on the seventh day, we remember that that's not true. That there was a certain point where God decided that the world should come into existence. When people have the same day of rest, that they're all together in their restfulness, and everybody will ask, what's the reason for this restfulness? So if everybody decides that their day of rest should be different, like if we have, we'll have the different religions, that sort of the Muslim day of rest is Friday, the Jewish day of rest is Saturday, and the Christian day of rest is Sunday. So since they're all different days, and they're not that this is what the point of the Sefer Chinuch is per se, that we should have dialogue with them in discussing why the world is newly created. Saying when you have different people, and even though they have the same principle that there's a day of rest, still since it's not everybody's going to be on resting on the same timetables, they're not going to discuss amongst each other, it's not going to be on a communal level that everyone will realize that today is a day of rest, and we should be asking these questions about why are we resting and what's all this about Chiddush HaOlam, that the creation of the world. So since all the Jews rest on the seventh day on Shabbos, what we call Friday night Saturday, then we're all going to be on the same page in terms of our philosophical leanings that we believe that God created the world at a certain point in time. Our motto is that God created the world for 6 days, like we say in Kiddush Shabbos morning. At least I discussed last time that there is that not everybody says the psukim before Kiddush Shabbos morning. And I said that even though it's technically certainly not required, so it's some sort of kiyum of zechiras of the Kiddush of Shabbos. So if we say the pasuk, what a beautiful thing to say the pasuk of Kisheshes Yomim Asa Hashem Es Hashemayim Vesaretz, that God created the world for 6 days, Uvayom Hashvi'i Shavas. Beautiful to say that before the Kiddush of Shabbos day, just like we say Vayechulu at night, although Vayechulu at night is obviously a much, much earlier minag, but the point is that we just the more we say it, the more we'll remember what Shabbos is all about, so it's a nice thing to do. That each person will be strengthened in his own belief in the true religion. A true belief. Umilavad, not only that, we have another reason for celebrating Shabbos. Umilavad zechiras chidush ha'olam, yesh bo zechiras neis mitzrayim. We also remember through Shabbos the miracle of coming out of Egypt. Shahayinu avodim sham velo hayinu yecholim lanuach beis chefzeinu b'menucha. That we were slaves over there and we couldn't just rest whenever we wanted. V'yoel hitzilanu miyadam v'tzivanu lanuach b'shvi. And God saved us from being slaves all 7 days of the week and commanded us to rest on the seventh day. V'alkein zochar b'mishnah Torah, that in the Ten Commandments in Parshas Vayeschanan, that the other version of the Ten Commandments. So here it says Kisheshes Yomim Asa Hashem Es Hashemayim Vesaretz, and in Dvarim it says it tells you the other reasons. Asharish Hasheni Sheishva Benucha. The second reason for Shabbos V'Amar Sham, the Mitzvah Shabbos, when it talks about the Ten Commandments over there. V'Zochar Toki Eved Hayisa Beretz Mitzrayim. That Shabbos is supposed to help you remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Al Kein Zivcha Hashem Elokecha Asosis Yom Hashabbos, and that's the reason that God commanded you to do the Shabbos, because you remember that we went out from Egypt and we became free, and now that we're free, it shows we're free because we don't have to work all the time. We can take 1 day off a week to rest. Dinei HaMitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah are as follows. Kigon, mahin hadvarim shenikroim ikar melachos l'chayiv bahen ha'usosan. So what are the things that are called milacha, called labor, that a person performing those actions on Shabbos should be liable for the punishment? So basically, we're not going to discuss all 39 milachos, so we'd be here forever. Not forever, but for a long time. And but with just the basic idea of the milachos is they're learned out from the Mishkan, that they're the milachos that were done in the desert to build the tabernacle, are basically, since it uses the word melacha over there, and it uses the word melacha by Shabbos, so it tells you that it's the same thing. So there's a difference of opinion amongst the early sources, exactly what parts of the tabernacle we learn out the prohibited labors from. But in any case, that's the basic idea. And the Mishnah, when it relates them in the Mishnah, in the seventh parak of Masechah Shabbos, it says that, basically, the way it describes the melachos is, first, there's a section on making bread. Basically, the melachos involved in growing wheat and making bread, and derivatives of those, and cooking in general, and things like that. And for weaving, the melachos involved in weaving clothing, and the melachos involved in processing animals into leather. And, of course, we have the... And writing also, okay, writing and erasing, and of course the most anomalous malacha, which is hotzah merishus l'rishus, of transferring objects from one domain to another, from the private domain, which is an enclosed area, to a public domain, which is an unenclosed area, or within four amos in the public domain. Those are all included in the biblical prohibition of hotzah. Kigon, arboy malachos chaser achas, shemanu chachamim besoldoseyim. So the Mishnah says there are 39 categories of malacha and derivatives of those. It's obviously not just those 39 specific things, like the Mishnah says, hadosh, threshing. But it's not just if you literally take a kernel of wheat and you thresh it from its hull. It's a lot of other things are included. There's a derivative called mefarik, of like, for example, squeezing things out, schita, mefarik, it's all sort of the same thing, where squeezing juices out of fruits is also a derivative of that. But all the malachos have derivatives. It's not just the general category per se. The malachos hakalos shasruhem ligeder. The advarim gamken anikroim shvusim. So there are other things that are asur midrabanan that are rabbinically prohibited to do on Shabbos, and basically these fall into three categories. One is that they're similar to malachos of Shabbos, so Chazal wanted to forbid them. Two, things that are gzeros that Chazal prohibited lest you come to do something that's prohibited biblically. There's also a category that's perhaps older than Rabbanan. It's already mentioned in the Nevi'im that we're not supposed to treat Shabbos like a weekday in terms of how we speak and dealing in our regular business. And there's certain actions that are weekday-type actions that I'm supposed to do on Shabbos, which is a kiyum, even though they're not biblical per se. Since it says tishbos, the Torah talks in a positive commandment also about resting on Shabbos, not just refraining from malacha. So this gives Chazal license to tell us what's Shabbistic, quote unquote, and what's not Shabbistic, what we're not supposed to, what's in the general category of resting. We do not observe Shabbos in a case where it's conflict with saving life. The quicker and more intensely you go to save a life rather than keeping Shabbos is better. It's considered more praiseworthy if you run to go save a life at the expense of Shabbos, because Shabbos does not stand in the way of saving lives. Yeah, Tom, what's the reason for that? Lefisha sibas asiyas mitzvah hu adam. That the point of performing mitzvahs is people, that they should, v'kiyum asibo kiyum akol. That the point, that again, where the Gemara has a language, that you desecrate one Shabbos now in order to save someone's life, and then this person will keep many Shabbosos later. So sometimes the message is more important than the technical details of the halacha. Obviously, that's a very limited principle, but in this case, that's certainly true. Mipnei kein amru zichronim livracha, shenemar kol chole lomar tzarechani shetechalu Shabbos alai. Even if a sick person just said, I need you to violate Shabbos for me, there's a sort of funny case where there's a blind woman who's giving birth and she says, I want you to light a candle. So she can't see if you're lighting the candle or not, but you are actually allowed to light the candle for her, because she's considered in danger of dying, so you have to listen to her, whatever she says. Again, it makes her feel better, makes her more at ease, so she'll be less in danger. Just somebody who's really feverish and really doesn't, seems like he's not doing so well. But if somebody's really clearly, even someone's very ill, but clearly not in any danger of life, then you're not allowed to desecrate Shabbos for him for performance of biblically prohibited actions. Sometimes there are leniencies involving rabbinically prohibited actions on Shabbos. One can do that for someone who is very ill, but not at all in danger of dying. And many of the there are tons and tons of details, and they're all discussed in Tractate Shabbos and in Tractate Yontif, which we also call Tractate Beitza. Meaning, sometimes where it talks about Yontif, it says, for example, there's a famous thing where it says, Kol ma she'asur mishum shvus, asur b'shabbos, asur gam b'yontif. The Mishnah tells us anything that's asur rabbinically on Shabbos also asur on Yontif, but that's in Maseches Beitza, that's not in Maseches Shabbos. So that those things listed in the Mishnah over there is you're not allowed to dance and clap and things like that, so you're not allowed. It tells you not to do that on Yontif, so you learn that out from, it says explicitly that you learn that for Shabbos as well, even though it's not in Maseches Shabbos. You have to learn Maseches Yontif also to know all the halachos of what you're allowed to do on Shabbos or not. B'noeges b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zichar m'kevos, it's applicable to men and women. Of course, it's a negative commandment, as all of those are applicable to men and women. There's no difference. The overalei b'meiza niskal, if you violate it on purpose, you receive the penalty of stoning, which is the most severe form of the death penalty. V'ushe yusham edim v'hasra, as long as there are witnesses, there are two witnesses who saw you perform the biblically prohibited action and warned you they are not allowed to do it. Because sheklal zeh biyadach la'olam, this is a general principle, she'ein miso malkus ele be'edim v'asra, there's no physical penalties of the death penalty or lashes unless there are two witnesses there who warned you before. You know that's biblically prohibited and you're not allowed to do it, and if you do it, we're going to give you the death penalty. And the person said, yes, I know, and I'm going to do it anyway. So in that case, one receives the death penalty, otherwise not. But if you don't receive the penalty of there aren't if the technical requirements for receiving the death penalty are not met, then you receive the penalty of kares, spiritual excision, which is the most severe form of divine punishment. That's also not so good. And the reason Shabbos received the death penalty is considered this is the covenant between us and God, the Jewish people and God. Also, someone who violates Shabbos, we've already discussed in the Sefer Chinuch. That points out that someone who willingly violates Shabbos publicly shows his being severed from the Jewish people more than any other mitzvah, and if for ritual purposes would be treated as if he or she is not even Jewish. So that's why it's such a severe thing. This is the communal observance of Shabbos is the most important thing binding the Jewish people together. So this is considered totally unacceptable behavior for any Jew on the most severe level. The point that the witnesses have to warn you before is to know whether you're doing it on purpose or whether you're doing it accidentally. And what happens if you do it accidentally? This is the principle in all places, and I'm not going to repeat it again. Don't ask me to repeat it, he says. As if we can ask him 1,000 years later. And if you did... It's called Melechas Machsheves. It's the principle for Melechas Shabbos. You have to have intention to perform a certain thing, and the intention has to be done. There are a lot of details about that. But if you do it on purpose, a biblically prohibited thing on Shabbos, with the intention of performing that action accidentally, like you didn't know it was prohibited, you didn't know it was Shabbos, as opposed to if you don't know what you're doing at all. If you don't know what you're, then that's called Misasik. That's not called Shogeg. You're just doing something without thinking. It's not even that you're considered to be doing it unwittingly. Like, for example, if you walk into a room and you flick on a light switch, okay, it might, depending on the kind of light bulb, that might not be an Issur D'oraisa, it might be whatever. But just for argument's sake, if you walk into a room and you flick on a light switch, that's called misasik. That's not obviously, it's not a great idea. It's not, you know, we shouldn't be clapping that you did such a thing, but it's not even considered to be doing something unwittingly in Jewish law for the purposes of penalties for Shabbos violation. The Masa Melechas Machsheves B'Shogeg, if you did something unwittingly, meaning you knew exactly what you were doing, you just didn't know was prohibited or you didn't know it was Shabbos, that day, Mevi Chatos Kivua, you have to bring a sin offering, and that's the atonement. That's where you get atonement for doing the prohibited action on Shabbos for. Even though we don't have Chatos nowadays, there are cases of the sages of the Mishnah that they wrote down in their books when they violated Shabbos accidentally. They wrote down, they had a little notebook where they wrote when the Beis HaMikdash is built, I owe one chatos, you know, wrote like little tally marks, how many chatos you have to bring. Okay, I think people have places to go, so we'll since we're at the end, we'll stop here.